This week, sure, people think that Freemasonry might die in 40 years, but what happens to the appended bodies? They probably die a lot sooner. In an article written in 2020, we re-examined exactly what that means and how we can approach it. Then we'll read a piece about the Grand Lodge budgets, looking at them from a business standpoint, called Education Over Membership, a business case study. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. Thanks very much to our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners for making this show possible. If you're out there and you've been listening and you think, hey, how can I assist this listener-supported Masonic education to ensure its accessibility to everyone interested in the royal art, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the various options. Both Patreon and PayPal are options. Now, a note on support for this show. If you are a producer level or above, or you are somebody who has ordered our producer's pin, we have a slight delay. We have run out of pins, which does not happen, and we are in the midst of negotiations on a new pin, which will be very similar, except we're going to go with a circular design, hopefully with a specific color blue and the traditional WCY triangular image within the circle. So we are working on that. If you are someone out there who has backed the show and you're waiting for your pin, or you've ordered a pin and you're thinking, where is my producer pin? Well, this is where we are. If you just cannot wait or you would like a refund, I totally understand. Just shoot me an email. No hard feelings, nothing else. I will immediately refund any monies you paid for a pin. But if I don't hear from you, then I will just send out the brand new pin to you as soon as we get it in, which shouldn't be too long. But I appreciate your patience. This week, I wanted to read a couple of pieces that were penned a few years ago and were actually published on a blog called From Darkness to Light, which I happen to know who the author of that website is, and I have access to the article still. And I wanted to read two of the articles that were up. One of them was something that I posted as a guest piece, and we'll get into those in just a few moments. Now, it's no secret that I had avoided becoming an officer in any of the appendant bodies of Freemasonry while I was still busy with, well, Symbolic Lodge and Blue Lodge stuff. Even after I was out of the East and had become a district deputy grand master, a district education officer, and a committee man for the Grand Lodge of Illinois for Masonic education in no particular order, I just didn't want to dedicate myself to something else unless I could really dig in. And I had waited quite a while until I had done that. Nonetheless, there has always been an interesting sentiment that Masons have for the appendant bodies, whether positive, mostly positive, but there is an air of negativeness that comes around. And I'd like to explore, perhaps not the negativeness of this, but an article penned from Darkness to Light called The Death Throes of the Appendant Body System. So let's check this out. I know it's a scathing title, and one that will certainly get people's feathers ruffled, to be sure, but hear me out on this one. Continental and UK Masonry have the largest groups of quote-unquote side orders, or as it is termed in the craft, appendant bodies. In the most mainstream jurisdictions, these include organizations such as the Royal Arch, the Cryptic Council, the Knights Templar, collectively, the York Rite, the Allied Masonic Degrees, the Ancient and Accepted Scottish Rite, Knight Masons, Mark Masters, and the Royal Order of Scotland, and many other groups that set up a table at Masonic Week in Washington, D.C. These subgroups of Masonic organizations with their own grand bodies, their own sets of dues, and their own regalia and titles are suffering from the same decline in membership as your typical Blue or Craft Lodge institutions. The simple answer is mathematics. As the decline delineated by the Masonic Services Association of North America suggests, those latest numbers, they can be found here, and as Brother Lance Kennedy so morosely points out in his article from 2018, the Blue Lodge system of Masonry is dying, all caps. A net loss of an average of 50,000 members per year from a combination of deaths in members who stop paying dues and leave has impacted the United States in such a way that there are fewer than 1 million Masons at the time of this writing. An organization that had almost hyperbolic growth through the Second World War is now bleeding away 50,000 plus members a year. This has a direct result on the membership statuses of these appended bodies, which rely on craft lodges for their members. The pool of potential candidates for Royal Arch, Knight Templar, and Scottish Rite come from one place and one place only: these craft lodges within their jurisdictions. So by virtue of a simple subtraction, we have the death of these appended bodies before the craft lodge system as we know it kicks the bucket. So we have two questions. First, is it true? And second, is it important? Let's tackle the first one. Will the appended body system reach unsustainable numbers before the traditional craft lodge system does? Yes, it surely will. The simple fact that the pool of people that join these side orders is dwindling at a steady rate, the appended body systems will do the same and die away before their parent organization does. When will this happen? I'm not sure, but projections by the likes of John Ruark of the Masonic Roundtable and others give a conservative estimate using this amazing tool called statistics of the year 2040 for the collapse of the current Blue Lodge system. It's reasonable to assume that the side order system will collapse before 2040, if the whole thing collapsing around our collective heads in 20 years. On to the second question, is it important? Well, that depends on what you, as a member of all these orders, who never ate at home and have more dues cards in your wallet than paper money, seek to gain from all these memberships. To some, it's a reason to get out of the house. To others, it's a search for further knowledge that drives one to join all these offshoots of craft Freemasonry. To others still, it's a place to gain more personal fame, honor, and a plethora of beautiful titles to attach to your Masonic resume. You may think that I have nothing but disdain for the appended body system in current mainstream Masonry. On the contrary, I do not. I own different color blazers, as many of you do. And I like most of these bodies for what they represent. They, at their core, represent a good concept to expand the breadth and depth of the mythos and meaning in Freemasonry. The practical application, however, has fallen short, far short, of that concept in the last 100 years. Many of these bodies don't serve their intended purpose any longer. All of them began with a purpose to highlight or espouse a certain aspect of the Masonic process. Most have now simply become dinner clubs, bereft of anything resembling the transmission of knowledge, and only give their members another night of the week out of the home. The Royal Arch expanded on the legend of the Third Degree and provides a fitting end to a story that is oftentimes left without an end in the craft degree system. It contains a beautiful system of degrees which expand on the legend and move the tale forward by hundreds of years, with riches unheard of in terms of symbolism and allegory. Nowadays, initiates are rushed through the degrees as quickly as possible so that they can become members and take a place in a very deep, progressive line. The Cryptic Council fills in the gaps between some of the degrees within the Royal Arch and historically imparted lessons of introspection and mortality. Nowadays, they are a close second to the Royal Arch system in terms of rushing people in the door to fill their emptying seats. The Commandery of Knights Templar is the third York Rite body, and one that seeks members from only the craft and Royal Arch systems. so they are probably going to dwindle away sooner than the rest, due to their more constrained pool of potential members. This was once one of the most beautiful degree systems in the Rite, containing allegory and symbolism found in few other places. Nowadays, it has become a little more than a hollow shell, not to mention the fact that it excludes Masons that do not profess belief in the Christian deity. I find it difficult to label this organization as truly Masonic with such exclusionary membership requirements. I could go on and on with all of the other appendant organizations. They all took a piece of their traditional Masonic system and tried to make something special, or they even left the social clubs and dinner clubs of the last century to invest in something more erudite in practice, but they too succumbed to the same. As Freemasonry declines, so too will these groups. Members will die off and dimit in equal numbers, at least the way it is today. And the pool of potential members, the Craft Lodge system, will also steadily decline. This brings us back to the second question, which I neglected to answer in full previously. Is it important that these bodies are disappearing? The answer is yes and no. Yes, because some absolutely beautiful systems of allegory and instruction would be lost, and Freemasons of the future who choose to experience more Masonry after their first 3 degrees will no longer be able to quench that thirst in a plethora of Masonic bodies that do exist today. Relegated to days gone by, tomorrow's Masons may lose out on very beautiful symbols with which to smooth their inner ashlars of their being. The answer is also no, simply because these offshoots of our original legend, with all their pomp and ritual and colorful aprons presently, do little to truly improve that inner temple of man. They currently answer no questions that we all seek to have answered. They no longer offer anything in the way of real, actionable change within. The moral of the story: care less about the window dressings and curtains or what color they are, and simply pull them open and get a look at what's on the other side of the window. Or take it a step further and act like that better person in the world, like you said you would when you took your first obligation. You would be surprised to see how actionable and relevant the lessons you learned in the Craft Lodge are in the real world. And they, without any fluff and window dressings, are enough lessons to last you a lifetime. From darkness to light. Certainly an interesting piece. I don't like getting into the statistics of all of this. However, it is a large pill to swallow that thinking in just less than 20 years at this point, Masonry may be gone. Or at least at the Grand Lodge level. To get the most out of these appended bodies, I do think it is important to dedicate something to preserving the rituals, which we have done. They're in books and things, and, well, I don't know what the future brings for the appended bodies, but certainly I do think there are too many. Especially a lot of them have just shells of degrees, which really are nothing more than chivalric orders and blessings that you're now a knight of this. There's really no other light to be conferred unto you. But anyway, I digress. This next piece is called Education Over Membership, a Business Case Study. This was something I wrote about 4 years ago after poring through tons and tons of data from the Grand Lodge proceeding books of various states. Here we go. I do have a disclaimer that the views and opinions expressed here in this article, and in general, in any of these shows, are generally just mine or the author's and in no way represent any Grand Lodge or Grand Lodge committees. So, with that said, here we go. Every year, there's some kind of article from a national news source shining a light on Freemasonry. Sometimes it's a piece aimed at demystifying our practices, such as the Sky One documentary that made waves in the 20-teens. Other times it's an essay about the seeming juxtapose between the world of the 21st century and the antiquated nature of Freemasonry. Others have addressed inequities in member qualifications. Our PR is really never that great. Recently, two articles had come out, ostensibly unrelated. Now, at the time of writing, this article that I'm reading to you was published back in December of 2020. The first from NPR Freemasons say they're needed now more than ever, so why are their ranks dwindling? This article dealt with much of what I wrote above. The second article was published by the Washington Post. No game days, no bars, the pandemic is forcing some men to realize they need deeper friendships. This piece was not about the Freemasons, except maybe it was. The article makes the case that men are depressed, and that we need connections. The report made some waves in Masonic groups who began talking about how Freemasonry could be the perfect place for these men. I maintain that it could be a disaster. We're at the mercy of the public, and the whimsical interest of a reporter who reads a wiki article and reaches out to a nationally known Freemason for comment, somehow giving their report the air of authenticity and credibility. These articles are likely not read by too many folks. Instead, they're probably most read by Freemasons themselves, as evidenced by my earlier remarks. Often the reports serve purposes not original to their intent. That is, they shine a light on problems or issues that we as members of the craft must face. Or maybe it's like the doctor looking at an infirm patient saying, "Look, you're old. It's time to die." Looking at our most significant issue, the proverbial ostrich with its head in the sand, is a good way to look at Freemasonry these days. Not that we hide from the issues these articles are pointing out, but rather we maintain that these are not issues. How dare anyone suggest that, as a fraternity, the world's oldest and best has problems? Harumph. The only people allowed to say we have problems are the kings or the Grand Lodge officers. And then only in the quiet of their chambers. But why? There's a line in many Masonic books. It's no secret. And it's true. It's no secret that we are an institution that is thirsty for members and driven by fear. Thirsty for dollars and driven by upsetting tradition. Of course, we're thirsty for members. But why? So we can retain our place on the top pedestal as the world's oldest and best fraternity. Is that still a thing? Members equal dollars. And that is the gist of the membership issue. Freemasonry, with its various camps, has never decided on what it is other than the old descriptive platitudes. Sure, we take good men and make them better. Every Masonic blog out there has asked the question, how do we do that? Well, that's for the individual lodges to figure out, not the fraternity as a whole. The lodge's job is to empower a member to become better, but also that member gets out of it what he puts into it. Do you start to see what's going on here? It's just kicking the can down the road. Why do we need cash? Freemasonry as an organization needs members to collect money, which allows us to continue our mission of whatever it is we do. The per capita, a portion of the lodge dues that goes back to the Grand Lodge of each state, pays for many things. Various committee expenses, Grand Lodge officer and office staff, trips, publications, website, web resources, the list is endless. We're a big institution. We need funds to keep going. We also need funds to add to our charitable coffers. Our charity to the profane world has become the hallmark of our existence. Where we once stood for liberty, equality, and brotherhood of man, we now write some big checks, seemingly the only way to get noticed anymore by the outside world. But then again, are we noticed for our giving? Returning to the various articles and television exposés created, written, filmed, etc., they all have something in common. They all harp on our membership and how it's shrinking, and we know this is the primary concern of our Grand Lodges. Course corrections. I contend that we can make Freemasonry the hallmark it was once, albeit in a more discreet and professional way, by focusing on our existing membership and being selective about who we let in the door. Please do not think I'm going to go into a rant about the West Gate. I won't. I've done that before. Freemasonry in the United States comprises some 1.1 million people, probably less. there is a sizable number of our members who, for reasons of their own, never return after being initiated. Others die. We lose them, and this is attrition. While we cannot control death, although we could probably serve healthier meals in our lodges, we can control men leaving. How can we do this? By focusing on the things that matter. In the recent articles published by NPR and the Washington Post, we get two perspectives that we're trying to reconcile. Men don't want to join Freemasonry because we're antiquated, stuck in tradition, male only, pick a reason. And men are craving a connection. Freemasons know that the craft would serve these men well, but how do you get them? Marketing? Not even close. Stick with this crazy writer. It might pay off. Every member of every recognized Grand Lodge in the United States, to my knowledge, should have access to the Grand Lodge budget line item details. I'm sure by doing so, you'll see some interesting things. If you can, request a copy and inspect it. Why? Because you deserve to know how much and where your dollars are spent. Full stop. How much money is spent on your leadership committee, your membership committee, your public relations committee, your marketing committee? Now what about your education committee? Notice a disparity? If you had these numbers open and in front of you right now, you might notice a disparity. Sure, membership committees need money, presumably to research and reach out to potential members. Sure, we need money for leadership. Don't they need to hold workshops and teach grown-ups who are already good how to be a leader? Some sarcasm here. And what about PR? We have to look good, don't we? Let's throw in a quote from Wilmshurst. It is absurd to think that a vast organization like Masonry was ordained merely to teach grown-up men of the world the symbolic meaning of a few simple builder's tools. Grand Lodge budgets vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. They can be hard to discern. In some, Masonic education is listed with a number relative to the dollars that they're budgeted for. In others, Masonic education appears as an umbrella under which various expenses are recorded. In some, youth organizations are contained. In others, district deputy mileage is listed. In others still, you'll find the printing of ritual manuals. To be sure, these all have a place in a budget, but in my research for this article, I made some calls I'd like to be upfront about. I subtracted the expense of youth organizations from Masonic education, and I did the same for district deputy mileage expenses in jurisdictions that utilize a district educator role. I kept printing of ritual work because it qualifies as a tool to teach. I made similar calls in the different budgets I was allowed to peruse. I also wish to say that studying the budget that were available to me, Alabama, California, Florida, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Massachusetts, Maine, Nebraska, New Jersey, Virginia, Washington, and West Virginia, was extremely eye-opening. What Grand Lodges consider to be Masonic education expenses varies far and wide, and what some Grand Lodges are paying for certain things was an eye-opener when compared to their Masonic education. One jurisdiction leases a copy machine, which costs them annually $6,000, more than what they spend on Masonic education. Let that sink in. Where am I going with all this budget stuff? The issue and the promise. Education is by far the lowest line item on the budget when we adjust it for what qualifies as education. And what's insane is that it's the one line item that matters most. Masonic education is what we promised, and it's the reason to continue to come to a lodge at all. It is the fulfillment of the commitment we've made, but it's also the can we kick down the road or the shit that rolls down the hill. Before you're a member, we say, we make good men better. After you're a member, you get out of it what you put into it. Wait a second. So, I make myself better? What the hell did I just join? A mentor once made an excellent analogy. He said, Robert, it's like scouting. We're molding these kids into better people, but we're not doing it through tying knots. It's the conversations that we're having while tying knots. And I have to agree. But these are seemingly life-altering conversations where values, morals, and life lessons are dispensed. In a Masonic lodge, this isn't happening in the lodge room. It's happening at dinner tables, before the lodge meeting or after. It's happening in the parking lot. It's happening in education book clubs and meditation circles. The logic is coming full circle. Doesn't it make sense to spend the most money on the thing that you promise to offer? Does a grocery store spend most of its money on advertising or the product? In 2015, Apple Incorporated increased its global advertising budget to $1.8 billion. It spent $60 billion on product manufacturing. It earned $215 billion in revenue, of which $84 billion was gross profit. This is just one example of what real-world know-how exhibits regarding operational success. If we make good men better, then those better versions of ourselves are the product. That $84 billion in gross profit? That could translate into more members, or at the very least, better informed and active membership. Are we spending 3,233% more on education than on marketing or leadership or membership? If not, then we've got some P&Ls to adjust. Such shifts could mean head-spinning changes in how our grand lodges operate. And committeemen will need to get on the same page. We have a lot of siloed organizations under our grand lodges, and many of them are working on similar projects which may or may not have real value to the overall goal. Have you ever walked into a place where the job was described to you in this fashion? Quote, "There's the way we do it, and then the real way we do it." Right now, our real-world concern is membership with the underlying mission of gathering funds. No one will say that out loud. The traditional position we have is to make good men better. It sounds better than "we need cash, please." But we all know it. What if the product's investment will equal an increase in revenue just like the real world? This is a game-changing philosophy for Freemasonry. The message? What I am hoping to convey is that until our Grand Lodges decide that the production of these good men should cost more than getting them in the door, we'll not see the growth that they want, or for that matter, the growth that we want. Of course, there will be those who say it's up to the lodges to do this. There are multiple problems with this retort. In the first place, can you say the same for the PR and marketing and leadership and membership committees? If not, why? Second, this is again kicking the can down the road, an obvious shirking of responsibility. And third, it's looking the other way again. We don't care because, pick a reason, the future. As we enter 2021, organized masonry enters its 300th or so anniversary. We've been massive, and we've been small. In fact, we've been smaller than we are right now. Projected cold data shows the end of Freemasonry within the next 40 years. Of course, if you're still alive in 2060, then Freemasonry isn't dead. All this to look forward to, if it doesn't change. But what if it does change? Freemasonry, as an organization, has a challenging time with change. Partly because of the misconstrued or misunderstood rules of our organization. We cling to the way we've always been in order to stay traditional. Well, a global pandemic has changed us. It's shown a light on things like the education of members. Countless lectures and meetups are being done online, untiled, and people are getting more value from this than they ever did in lodges. Yikes. The issue here should be obvious. Especially to anyone who understands the concept of voting with your feet. When Freemasonry invests in its means of production, education, it will sell the product by the way those products are being deployed in the real world. No one uses a BlackBerry anymore, guys. People saw the iPhone, they switched. Secondly, the other committees will bolster those products, our better men. The message will shift from, "Look at this company which does stuff," to, "Look at these people who do stuff. By the way, they're builders. I think they're Freemasons." If all these men out there today need Freemasonry, then we better be damned ready to make it what they need. We can't just show them a fancy ad, put them through a festival, and hope the local lodge picks up the slack. Freemasonry is a lot like that fire festival. Marketing promises, collecting the money, and leaving people stranded on a beach. We can't do that anymore. As new men enter the Grand Lodge line, it is elementary to suggest that they will be progressively younger in age. Younger age means they're in no doubt more in tune with the current world perspectives. This means that ideas that influence them will necessarily affect the way that people operate in the Grand Lodge. I can only hope for the future of Freemasonry that they see the solutions. Solutions that the world's most successful companies have already deployed and that worked to make them industry leaders. Does Freemasonry make better men than Toastmasters does? Than Scouts do? What about other college fraternities? If you're screaming at me right now that Freemasonry is different, well, maybe it is, but the world doesn't care. If we want to stand out, we need to invest in our product line, our initiates, by focusing on other committees as your top dollar expenses. What you're going to get is an influx of membership and money for a year or two. Do we want 30 people to pay you $15 for 2 years? Or do you want 10 people to pay you $15 for 20 years? And if we're firing on all cylinders, it could be even more. Oh yeah, and Freemasonry will fulfill the promise we make to every candidate. Isn't that worth it? Invest in education. That's it for this week. I hope you guys all enjoyed this episode and my education over membership rant soapbox. If you'd like to continue the conversation, feel free to post it in the Craftsman Plus Facebook group where I can see it for sure and we can discuss. You can tell me I'm wrong or I'm right or I've got some issues to adjust or whatever the case might be. I look forward to the conversation. My thanks to all of the listeners. I want to thank you all so very much. To our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners, it's because of you. This happens every single week. And if you're out there thinking, how do I get on board with that? Head on over to our website, wcypodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the various options available. With that, we'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
Jose is not